Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
After a two-week hiatus, Speedway Soccer's back with a mid-season review. We're going to break down what's happened thus far this season for NSC and what we expect to see the rest of the way. We've got guests John Freeman and Wes Bowling on for this episode. Stay tuned. This is Speedway Soccer. Everybody, welcome into Speedway Soccer. We are on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network, also on the Beautiful Game Network, brought to you by Golden Gold Press and Roughneck Scarves. We're here at Alley Taps on Historic Printer's Alley. I'm Davey Shepard. I'm here tonight with
Ben Wright,
Andy Simmons,
and Jonathan Slate.
And guys, good to be back together. A little bit of life got the best of us there for 2 weeks, but we're back with a new episode, and this is a fun one to do. I think we had a lot of fun with this episode last year, the mid-season review. There's been a lot of soccer played, still a lot of soccer left. What, we're a game over the midway point now, I think, so just past it.
We would be two if it wouldn't be for the
Red Bull abandonment. But let's get caught up real fast on results that have happened just in the last 2 weeks while we've been off podcast-wise. We have covered all of this in print, so you can check reviews, ratings, all of that stuff out at SpeedwaySoccer.com. Sloops also had a few pieces come out midweek that you can check out as well. The first result that we had on the list, Ottawa 3, Nashville 3, back-and-forth game, ended in a draw. We've got Nashville 2, New York Red Bulls 1. That game was abandoned at halftime, has to be replayed in full. Followed that up with a 1-0 loss at North Carolina FC, and then the 2-1 loss away at Louisville this last weekend. So kind of a string of back-and-forth results there. Look, we're going to talk big picture of the season goes. I think being able to play that New York Red Bulls game and get a 2-1 victory there, or any kind of victory there, I think that North Carolina result looks different after that. So I just think that's something to keep in mind. But ultimately, we're going to sit down in just a few minutes with Wes Bowling and John Freeman. You guys are going to hear an interview I did with them just yesterday, and I think they have a lot of insight. But Wes said it really, really well. And some of this has been out of our control. Some of it's been in the club's control. It really has been a season of missed opportunities. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But, guys, let's kind of just get into it, okay? I think the first thing we should probably touch on is transfers that have happened both in and out. We've had a few things happen relating to the MLS club. We had Derek Jones come in, who's since been injured. We don't know if he's gone for the season, but seems like he might be.
Definitely isn't a short-term injury.
No, not a short-term injury.
And we can only speculate on these injuries as well.
Exactly.
Too, so...
And I think with the transfers, it also comes into fact talking injuries as well, because the history of or the story of the last month has been injuries. We saw Vermeer go on loan to Vegas, and then as of today has turned around.
Officially been recalled.
Seven days later.
Yeah, 7 days later.
It has to be one of the shorter loan spells.
Yeah, and he didn't play a minute. But
I mean, they had one game, and it was the day after he arrived. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we saw LaGrassa get injured. What you said, Jarrett Jones got injured. LaGrassa and Reed both had some injuries coming out of the game against Louisville on the weekend. I think all of us, you know, having talked through after that game, we all thought, like, it looks like Balu may be the only fit midfielder. So it really sucks that we lost Vermeer.
Yeah.
So it was good to see there was a recall clause there that we were able to bring him back. And he's going to get a good bit of minutes.
I mean, right. As of right now, I mean, it might change before the Memphis game. It's Bolue Akinyoede and Vinny Vermeer are the two healthy central midfielders.
And it's funny too, because Nashville is going to send off Vermeer to Vegas to get some playing time, but he's going to get plenty of playing time now, probably more than he wanted. But you know,
well, then, good and for then him. Cameron Lancaster too, another injury coming out. I guess what was it, 29-30 minutes into the
It was hard to tell because it was like. The feed, you couldn't tell if it was. I thought it was a hydration break or something for a minute.
Yeah, but when he went back, he got injured. Yeah. Went back in, tried to play, and couldn't carry on. Hopefully, that means it's not super serious. But I mean, at this point, it's just
that's bad timing too, since he's on a really good run of form right now. Like every time he turns around, he scores a goal. I don't know how have it in front of me, but it was a streak of matches that he scored a goal in or something like that.
Probably the most notable signing we've had so far we haven't seen play in Nashville is David Akam. He is at Columbus Crew.
Also injured,
but in 13 games played this year, he has registered 4 goals and 3 assists at the MLS level. So, you know, look, we're going to get into what we think is going to happen this window the rest of the season after the break and after the interviews here in a bit, but that's obviously something to keep an eye on, is players like that. But listen, let's walk through it, okay? We've obviously had injuries. We've had things that we think have limited this team. And I'm going to just come out and say it. I said this in, trying to think. It was either Facebook or Reddit or something not too long ago. I don't know that we can fairly judge what this team actually is yet, or judge Gary or Jacobs or whoever, because we just haven't seen the team healthy enough to really know. Now, look, there's probably a conversation to be had about that in general of, well, are we signing players with known injury histories and stuff like that? But at the USL level, I think you've got to bet on talent, right? And I think that's what we did with a guy like Cameron Lancaster, who has known injury histories. John Freeman's going to talk about that in more detail in a bit. But, you know, we've seen when he's healthy, it's a step above quality at forward that we haven't had at this club. Yeah. Rios, I think, is up there right there with him. But, like, those two guys, anybody from last year at forward doesn't necessarily hold a candle to
him. I mean, I think some of the injuries, though, like you mentioned that Lancaster having injury history. Trivett has injury history. But a lot of these other injuries, I mean, that we've had throughout the season have been kind of...
to say fluky, but that's
like,
what it is, man.
You know, like Alan Wynn started off the season, he was out for 3 weeks with a concussion. Like, those kinds of things and those kinds of injuries. Derek Jones's was a freak. Like, not freak, but, like, there's things, like, it's...
It was preventable, possibly.
And, like, you see this a lot of times. Like, you think you have, like, I think we all thought we had a lot of depth at midfield. And, like, it always feels like it comes, you know, instead of, you know, losing a center back here, losing a midfielder there. It's, you know, we've just lost all of our midfielders.
Well, maybe it's just, in about the 1 week period. Yeah.
I was just going to say, maybe it's just bad luck, too, because we did. There was a lot of depth in that midfield, and then that's probably what they were thinking whenever they transferred off Ramon Howell. They were plenty of depth right there, and then, you know, just, you know, it starts to fall apart with the injury.
But. Yeah, and look, I don't – I'm not saying let's sit here at the midpoint in the season and just absolve the club of not capitalizing on what could have been a better season, right? I'm not saying that, because – at the end of the day, like in Gary and Mike and all of those guys would be the first ones to say, like, hey, this is a professional outlet, and like we're going out there to win soccer games, and we haven't won as many as we could have, because there's points that we've dropped, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit as well. That being said, who has become your absolute first choice center back, gone with injury for 4 games in a row now?
A month. He's been out since June 8th.
Guy who set the record for goal scoring in the USL last year has missed considerable time. And now, in my opinion, one of the standout players of the season, LaGrassa down. Derek Jones, guy you brought in, MLS player. It's like, if you have those guys healthy, the results just point blank do not look the same.
And look, I know I feel like a lot of the reaction we've seen online recently has been pretty negative. I think... I'm going to kind of take an opposite line here. I think it makes the season even more impressive in a lot of ways that a guy, you bring in Cameron Lancaster. He's a guy you are kind of banking on to produce. And he's produced when he's been healthy, but it's been a much smaller scale than you would have expected. You're still the second highest scoring team in USL. You're still 5 points out of second place with over half the season left to go. And you have a back stretch of the season that's loaded at home. So, I mean, I know there are issues, and I'm not saying that this has been a perfect season, but I think... The club actually has been pretty decent considering, and there's still a lot of season left to play.
So I want to hop out of the flow that we've got set up and say, I think you guys will kind of get where I'm going with this pretty fast. What was the number one thing we heard coming into the season?
Goals.
We need to score goals.
Goals. Where are we? Second highest scoring team in the East, right?
And
Rios, we have a player in the race for the
Golden Boot. I was about to say, yeah. He's in the hunt for the Golden Boot.
Right. I mean, last year we would have, like, I feel like last year people would have traded results just to see more goals scored.
Well, I mean, that was explicitly stated over and over and over again. Right. So, like, look, at the end of the day, and I said this after that game to you guys, I don't think you can complain about 3-3 versus Ottawa, who's a good team who can score some goals. I don't think you can complain about a result like that and be like, oh, we've got to score.
Right.
So
pick one and just be consistent with it.
Yes. All that being said, look, we're going to talk rest of the season a bit. As it stands, we're, I think, 2 points out of a home playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
2 points out of a home playoff game, and we've got a backloaded home schedule, and we haven't seen a healthy lineup thus far this season. I mean, maybe for a game or two, really sporadically. So, look, I'm not trying to, like, shine this a turd up or something like that, but, like, I think there's a lot of upside to the remainder of the season. And like you said, Ben, with the injuries that we've had, it hasn't always been pretty. There have absolutely been growing pains. We have got results based off of individual brilliance, but, like, that's going to happen. Yeah. So, I mean...
So, this is kind of going back to the flow of, like, looking at first half, and we're going to discuss, like, players that, you know, that were surprises, players that we think would bring up what we want to see in the next season, but, you know, looking at the first half of the season in one sentence, what do you got? How do you feel? Like, how would you classify the first half of the season?
Well, I think they answered a lot of questions in the off season with the, second in goals scored. That's helpful. And I think just this stretch has been a little bit of bad luck, I think, as well, too. So maybe unlucky?
Unlucky, I think, is fine.
Yeah.
I think that's a good word. I think we've absolutely been unlucky. As far as where I feel about it, like, I think if you look at everything in context of what's happened, injuries, what other teams are doing, blah, 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 I am satisfied with fifth in the table right now. I think that's not much below what our ceiling for what we've dealt with so far this season could be.
Well, it's a very tight top of the table, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, it is.
But Tampa Bay has a good lead, but from second to fifth, it's pretty tight.
They have 10 points on us. If I haven't played the same number of games, I think for me, I would say it's just been a half of missed opportunities.
Yeah.
And which, like, if we look at, you know, we've struggled, which Ben, you've outlined, we've struggled to win against and beat teams in playoff positions.
Worst record of all the
teams in playoff positions. We have instances where we've, you know, not closed out games. So I think we were talking before we recorded, I think there's an easy potential of 12 additional points.
We took 3 of those 12 points, right?
3 of those 12 points. So, like, 9 additional points, which that 9 additional points puts us in second. So
for the,
like,
listeners, we're talking about 4 games specifically that Nashville SC held the lead in against opponents that are higher than us in the table. Against playoff teams in general, right? That we ended up losing results from. That was the loss to Louisville, and then the draws against Pittsburgh, Ottawa, and New York Red Bulls away.
And some of those were good, like the New York Red Bulls draw, I think, was a good point.
Right.
And so I don't think all of those were bad results, but I think there have been
instances. But at the end of the day, we held a lead in the game didn't make it stand. Right. And that's a thing that we, I think, excelled at last year, was holding 1-0 leads.
Yeah, I think my word for this, like, season as compared to last season would just be different. Because last year we saw a team that's just, which I know that's super generic, but last year it was a team that was struggled to score goals, really good defensively, really good at home. This year it's been a team that's pretty good on the road, not as good at home, really good offensively, and has just really struggled defensively.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. So we have what was the – and I talk about this with the guys in just a minute in the interview. You'll hear us, so I don't want to go too far into it. But second-best defense in the league last year. You bring in a good defender, Ken Tribbett, into that side. And he kind of becomes the linchpin, displaces a fan favorite as a starter. And once he's kind of injured and back out of the picture, the back line doesn't look anything like it did last year.
It makes you realize how important he is to that line and what they saw in when bringing him in as well, too.
So in the 14 games before he was injured, I mean, I think he missed one or two of those, but Nashville conceded right about 0.8 goals per game. In the four games since he's been injured, they've conceded 8. So they're averaging 2 goals a game without him, over a goal more per game without Ken Trivett.
Yeah, I just don't think you can understate what he's brought to the lineup, but I think I would pair with that. I don't think you can understate how differently Gary is setting this team up to play, because I think it's the proof is in the pudding. Like, we're trying to score more goals. Guys like Taylor Washington are getting more forward. Darnell King obviously is getting – I mean, he played forward before. You know what I mean? So winger before. So he's obviously focused on getting forward. And then I think you've seen the midfielders in more advanced positions as well. So
I mean, Bolu Akinyode played – I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he played more minutes last year than he's on track to play this season. And he's a purely defensive midfielder.
Right.
I think it's been a change in mentality.
It's a testament to that, both of those things paired together, where he's been. Listen, let's kind of start just talking through some little bits that we've had, just points that we wanted to talk about, highlight some guys. Let's start with surprise performers for the year. And Andy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I just think it has to be LaGrassa, because coming into this season, we figured it'd be Reed and Bolu kind of controlling the midfield. But LaGrassa just has come in first couple games, and he's really owning it. And you could tell as well, too, that he's just been bossing around.
And Slave, you had a vote for LaGrassa as well.
Yeah, and it's not that I thought that he would he would play a really key role in this team. Mm-hmm. He has just upped his game an additional level and provided an offensive, portion to his game that he really didn't have last year. And, he scored some goals. He's provided assists. He's actually done really well in, when he's played as a 10, basically, which I don't think is necessarily a skill set. But we've got to see him more in his natural central positions rather than being out on the wing. I've thought he's played really, really well and played better than I ever expected him playing.
Yeah, I don't think we mean that as a slight, that we think it's a surprise that he was that good, but it's just, I think he's like he was one of the better players in the side last year. We knew he was going to be one of the better players in the side this year, and he's even just taken to a different level.
He just over exceeded our
expectations. Which is great.
I think we can all agree he's probably been one of the best two or three players on the team.
Yes. Absolutely.
I would, hands down, he's probably, top two or three players of the season.
So, Ben, me and you both went with a different direction, and I'll let you go ahead and start.
Yeah, I went with Ropapa, and I think we saw him in flashes last season. And I know he had a pretty slow start to the season this year. I know he came back not in the greatest shape, but I think once he started to get more involved, I mean, there were 4 or 5 games within the past month and a half, 2 months, that he was the best player on the field for either team. And I think he's still a young player, and I think he's kind of showing flashes of potential that he could have down the road.
Yeah, for me, it was just one of those ones where you can see that the talent is there and sparks, fits and starts. And I was just worried that he was just going to be, left in the dust a little bit, just formationally and with different guys coming in and stuff like that. I just didn't know what is, that when you're asking a guy to kind of become a different kind of player. Yeah. It's easy for that guy to just lose interest, disengage. Maybe it's better to get a fresh start somewhere else. That's what I was concerned with. He's absolutely not done that. I think he's been, like you said, over the last month, probably the best player on the team. I have a different guy down for MVP so far this season, but I think he's right up there in the top 3, 4, 5 guys for excelling on the field. And that's the kind of guy you want doing that at this time this year, because that's the kind of guy who ends up making an MLS roster. As a depth player, probably, but if he keeps putting in results in the times he gets minutes, I think the guy's got a bright future in front
of
him.
I know we're going to go into more depth about this later, but I feel like he's kind of a low-risk, high-reward type player for the future.
Yep. Agreed completely. All right, guys, so the last question we'll do before the break here. Your MVP so far this season. Ben, we're going to start with you.
I'm going to take a different...
Sure.
I'm going to go with Matt LaGrassa, just because I think I'm going to be the only person who doesn't say someone else. But yeah, I feel like he's been one of the most consistent players on the team, and I think we've seen him just kind of, like Slape said, he'd take his game up to a different level, I think largely because he's playing where he's more comfortable. But yeah, I think he's been possibly the most consistent player on the team.
Guys, we all got the same ones. Well, somebody could field it.
Well, I do want to make a disclaimer that it's very close between him and Trivet for me.
Okay.
I feel like Trivet.
Like
yeah, because I feel like you've
seen...
We'll
just make a case for Trivet.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean,
three of them are top-rated players.
Yeah. We've already gone through that, that you know, we don't, they that he's given up less goals per game within
right.
the lineup as opposed to right now.
Yep.
He also scored a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's dangerous in the box, too.
He's got two so far in the season.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, anytime you can just count on a center back to chip in one or two here and there, it's all, I mean, yeah, he's, so in half, I mean, he's missed four games through the first half of the season, just over the first half of the season.
I think five, technically.
Well, if you count the Red Bulls, it would have been five.
Not through injury. Just
okay,
a coaching
yeah.
decision.
So, yeah. I mean, two goals in, you know,
just
less
a rock
than half
back
of the
there.
Season played. I agree that that's a fair.
But we all agree that Rios is our choice
yeah.
because he's the
yeah.
leading goal scorer right now, and he's in the race for the Golden Boot right now.
And I think also it's not just the goal scoring with Rios, which is like, I mean he is able to hit the ball so well. You know, I know Ben, you've been out at practice, and you know even having talked to some of the players as well, they're like. You like I've said, like you wouldn't believe the things that he does in practice is just how well he strikes the ball. Same thing for Cameron Lancaster. But I think one of the things with Rios is he is one of the players that I get like that watching him, and I know he's already signed for from the MLS mm-hmm. team. But like I feel his game translates really well. He finds space. He's able to hold the ball up.
His hold up play is so good.
Strong. He's fairly quick. He's got a fantastic shot. So I think he's a guy that we're going to see that, like, watching him this year, I thought, you know, like, he's not going to come to MLS and score 25 goals next year, but, you know, 7-8 off the bench next year is not bad. But so I just think...
And he's 24 years old.
Yeah.
He's only moving in the right direction.
And he's only getting better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that, you know, the goals are important, but I think his development and seeing how he him progress as he's continued to get better throughout the season... you know, he's been out another level.
Plus, he brings a lot of attention to himself as well, too. I can't remember which game it was, but he got completely nullified in that game, and I think Nashville still scored.
It was the Bethlehem game that allowed...
He occupies the defense.
He put in
really
like, grinder minutes in that game and freed up
like,
space.
If he's not scoring, he's opening up space for other
people.
Agreed completely.
Yeah. And that's an underrated skill that a striker
Well, and that's
have.
Why I think he translates. He creates space for other people. He's able to kind of make a shot out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I just think the guy does everything the right way.
I'm
always looking for a reason to praise the defender. You guys know that. I love Ken Trippett, but for a club where the fans were screaming for goals, this guy has brought the goals. He's helped create the goals.
Mm-hmm.
He's converting 30% of his shots.
Yeah, exactly, man. So
yeah,
it's
absurd.
And I think his game is trending in the right direction. And you even talk about being a grinder. Dude played 25 minutes on an injury the other day because we were out of subs.
And we, yeah. I mean, and it
you
wasn't
didn't know.
Significantly.
Right, like, no, you didn't know. I mean, he didn't look the same that he always looks, but, like, he still looked dangerous. You know
right.
what I mean? So it's
yeah.
That guy's rock solid, man. And that, for me, that's the guy. And I think, obviously, he's already on an MLS contract. We're going to talk players who we think will go up, but that guy's rock solid, so. I think I like where he fits into the team moving forward. Listen, we're going to come back out of the break, and we're going to sit down with John Freeman and Wes Bowling. We're going to talk about their thoughts as announcers on the season, what they're looking forward to. So listen, stay tuned for that. We're really excited. Really good insight there. We'll be back. This is Speedway Soccer.
This episode of Speedway Soccer Pod is brought to you by Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scarves for your team or group at roughneckscarves.com.
Welcome back to Speedway Soccer. This is Davey Shepherd. We're in the 104.5 The Zone studios, and I am with Wes and John. And guys, we're going to talk soccer today. Hey, thanks so much for joining us. It's always great to have you guys on. We know our listeners love it. Our readers love it. So we're just grateful for you all for taking the time to join us. And listen, we're going to talk big picture. That's what this episode's all about with us at Speedway. We're just past the midway point in the season. You know, I don't think the season's gone entirely according to plan, and we're going to get into some of that in just a minute. But the fans definitely feel like that. I think there was just a certain level of expectation coming into the season. And for whatever reason, I think a lot of it's outside of the club's control. We're not at that where we expected to be right now. So, but first, let's just get your very, very brief recaps from the Louisville match. We go up 1-0 the first half, and then – in my opinion, it was all Louisville pretty much the whole game. So
it was easy to be disappointed by the setback, certainly, but hard to be surprised by it, especially after Rio scored in the 11th minute. You feel like Nashville has momentum, and Louisville immediately marches right down the pitch and creates a couple dangerous chances. And yeah, you're right. I think, you know, Nashville certainly would have hoped to have at least gotten a result out of that, but it was never going to be a clean sheet the way Louisville was pressing, and especially on that pitch, on that awkward pitch that they have. It's so tough to shut those guys out. Nashville did it once last year, but I don't think it was ever really in the cards that was going to happen this time out.
Yeah, I think when you look at Louisville and you look at their continued success, a lot of it goes back to them knowing exactly how to play on that field. And by playing it, it means a lot of different aspects. One, they know how to not get hurt on it. I mean, Nashville had four players show up on that field, and it's an abnormality that four players get injured in one game on that field. I'm not saying it's an incredibly dangerous place to play, but it has some different dimensions and feels, and maybe you change, you know, born on natural turf because there's an artificial surface on it. And nevertheless, Nashville ends up four players injured after it. Then you also look at just how you play that field. All of the goals, I believe, happened on one goal. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's happening on the natural grass surface. So you've got to factor that in. And then you look at the first half, it was what, 75-25 possession,
mm-hmm.
and Nashville somehow gets a goal out of it. I think Louisville, you know, had over 10,000 fans. You go on the road to the defending champions. It's the response that you expect from a team like Louisville. So when I look back at that match, it is this kind of like, how much can you really take from it when you have four injuries? When you're playing on a field that Gary Smith has called the most challenging he's ever faced in North America, or any field that he's faced, because the only other places he's coached is in Europe. And then you think, you know, you're factoring in defending champions, a hungry defending champion team, because they hadn't had a lot of good results, and a team that had become much more healthy over the last couple weeks as well. Louisville had some injuries early. When I look back at it, you know, maybe you think of it as a one-off, and I'm really curious about just how the second match will come in when they come to First Tennessee Park. Better surface, hopefully some healthier players for Nashville SC. And then I think we get a really good gauge of just how this rivalry is turning out, especially knowing that last year Nashville defeated Louisville at home, and it's one opportunity. And that was the fifth time they've played, and it's the fourth time they've played in Louisville.
That was the Mother's Day game, right?
It was. That was the Lebo Maloto brace.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very good result. And, you know, I mean, it's like you said, when you've got those injuries – in what is absolutely a difficult place to play, I think you've kind of just got to cut bait and get out of there and not try to like diagnose what happened. But at the end of the day, it's just, it comes at a disappointing string of results, right? Like there's no way around that. And so I think maybe that's just kind of been the, Wes, we were talking before John got here. It's like the season of what could have been, or missed opportunities.
It is.
And you know, we look at the table right now, just past the midway point. Somehow we're still fifth on points, right? We're absolutely even on points with Louisville, who sits right behind us. And then you've got Ottawa at 28, just a point behind us. Then a little bit of a gap opens up. You know, when you talk about what this season has been so far, that is the storyline, right? It's the things that we've let slip away.
I think so, and things that just naturally have happened outside the club's control.
Right.
You know, one missed opportunity is the freaking lightning delay against New York Red Bulls, too. Yeah. What's different if that team finishes the final 45, holds off a great New York team, or even just gets a point out of that, and then goes to North Carolina FC with momentum? Instead, they go to Raleigh on the tired and not having those 3 points, and play a bad first 30 minutes that, mm-hmm. that result in a loss, and then that continues. A missed opportunity of not having Cam Lancaster for about half of the first half of the season. What is different about this team if he and Rios have been playing together up top the whole time? And yeah, some unforced errors certainly as well, having led in four contests where they ended up not taking all 3 points, not beating a top 10 team at home in three chances in the first half of the year. The flip side is there will be plenty of opportunities in the second half of the season. The road to the top of the table still goes through Nashville. Seven of those top 10 teams will come to Music City in the second half of the year. So lots to play for, lots of hope still.
Yeah, I certainly agree with really a lot of the second half of that statement of so much to hope for here in this second half is Phil, even though at 29 points, middle of the table, has it positioned itself for a major run here in this second half? The injuries that we've talked about, you know, we don't know the extent of them, but those could certainly impact their ability to make a run like that. But when you look at the table and then you look at Nashville's schedule, 10 of its final 15 games are going to be at home. Now you can look at the other side of the coin and say, well, they've been better on the road. How much of an impact will this stretch of home games be? I think when you look at, you know, several weeks of staying at home, practicing on your field, not having to travel, you would like to think that Nashville would be setting itself up for a major run here. And then the other things they have to factor in is things were pretty good until Ken Tribbett got hurt. Ken Tribbett gets hurt, and then suddenly defensively, it's not up to the standards that they've had. Then you look at the other end of the coin too, second in the table in scoring. You know, so it does matter just what your expectations were going into the season. I think a lot of people, me included, were like, let's just score some goals. Let's play some entertaining games.
Yeah.
And they've certainly fit those expectations. And you wonder, you know, if they get a little bit more stubborn on defense, when Ken Tribbett comes back, you know, if the defense starts letting in less than, you know, one or two goals a game, which was pretty custom last year, and this team continues to score at this clip, and they're playing all these home games, we could have a lot different of a conversation here in the next couple months or so.
Well, let me ask a question about Ken specifically there, because, and again, Wes and I were chatting about it earlier. You have what, without Ken, was the second best back line in USL last year. Ken comes into this side, and I think strengthens it in a way that I personally was not expecting. I thought he would be a rock-solid addition to what was already a rock-solid back line. He absolutely became the, I think, both the tactical leader and the emotional leader of that back line. And then once he's been taken out of the lineup, we're at 6 and 7s in back there. It just seems, I don't see where the drop-off happened from what was last year's team. Now, in your opinion, is that, are we playing more attacking? Are we committing more forward? Is Bolu not being the holding six that he was for lots and lots of last year? Is that having an effect without a guy like Ken in the back line? What's the difference between the team we had last year? Because it's the same guys outside of Ken who is not there right now.
It's an interesting question. It goes back to a conversation I had with Gary Smith a couple weeks ago. I believe it was before the Ottawa game at home. And they had just played Hartford in that, probably, in my opinion, the most entertaining match that the club has ever played. And Gary Smith said, you know, we're playing this Ottawa team, and if it's 3-2, he wouldn't mind. You know, he loves clean sheets. He would love for the other team to not score at all, just like any coach would. But he said, if it ends up us winning, he'd almost rather it be 3-2. And I feel like there's a bit of a philosophy shift with Nashville SC. Not that Gary Smith last year was saying we're going to go out and try and get a 0-0 draw against Louisville on the road. He never really came into a match saying we're just going to bunker down. That's not the Nashville way. That's not in the club's DNA. But when you look at this year, there's this real excitement about entertaining. There's all of this attacking talent. There's some momentum to build with Lancaster and Rios going forward to the next level. And I think that, you know, that's come at a little bit of a cost defensively. And Gary Smith has said that your teams have this pendulum, and sometimes it swings defensively and that is at the expense on the offensive end. Sometimes it swings a little bit too far the other way. And he's gone on record saying he just thinks they're taking a little bit too much of risk going forward. Maybe the wingbacks are getting overcommitted and getting too far up the field and leaving the center backs exposed. I mean, it's a matter of when they find balance. If they can find balance, you know, what will that do to the score lines that we're seeing?
And when personnel is limited, when you lose a Ken Tribbett, you can't just automatically reset that chemistry to the ironclad group of last year when that mentality is shifted. You mentioned the mentality, but even the personnel brought in are brought in to play a different kind of game. Darnell King was trained as a forward, grew up, you know, really being used to being really aggressive and assertive. His eyes get really big when the team is attacking so aggressively. And, you know, I think he's done his job, which is to press further up the field. How do you change that mentality and shift back to needing to lock things down when you're playing at Louisville? I don't think you do. I think you keep playing with that mentality. And that is tough. I think that's a real challenge that they're going to have to find an answer for. And especially at home, I think that's the really disappointing piece for this team, but it's still fixable, is the goals they've allowed at home, letting Ottawa come back and, you know, equalize a couple times and and the 3-3 result. I think that's the key here in August, especially with so many home matches coming up at First Tennessee Park, and of course the one at Nissan Stadium against Indy, is maybe changing that mentality just a little bit to be a little more ironclad while personnel is limited. And then once Ken is back and is an anchor, maybe then you think about adjusting and being more of an assertive, incisive team.
And the psychology is different when you're an expected front runner like Nashville this year. So last year, goals were, you know, hard to get the team to confess because I don't feel like they knew, you know, first year, are we good enough to be top four? Should we be happy with playoffs? You know, should we just show a good product in our first year and then figure, you know, more long-term steps out in the second? When you think about this team going in, I mean, Dave, you mentioned, you know, what were your expectations for this team if you could pick a spot on the table? And the opponents know that. And then Nashville also may be thinking, you know, we really, really need a home playoff game. And to do that, we would need to be top four. And suddenly, instead of when you're going on the road and thinking about, man, if we get to the 60th minute, we're on the road at a good team, lock it down, let's get that point. Now Nashville to finish top four on the road. And I think that may be a reason for being a little bit more exposed in the back line because they're taking more offensive chances. I do look back at stats from last year. And in the USL, I believe it was of top five defenses in the USL. I could be getting this stat wrong by maybe one or two teams, but out of the top five defenses in the USL Eastern Conference last year, none of them made it, I think, out of the first round except for Cincinnati. And we know how that ended up for Cincinnati. So in the end, if your offense is clicking heading into the postseason, statistically, that's proven to be more of a better indicator than your defensive structure and capabilities.
So we've talked about a bit about Tribbett. I think probably outside of points that we've let go and stuff like that, just injuries as a whole over the course of the season have to be kind of an ongoing storyline. And I know something that's been discussed on Twitter in different places is specifically with Lancaster. What can we hope to see over the last half of the season? Because we've seen what the guy can do when he's healthy. We saw it last year, right? I thought that montage that they showed during the game was great. And it, you know, it showed what he was able to do with a full healthy season. And that's the guy who, I mean, he's on an MLS contract, right? Like, it is what it is. So that's the guy who we're putting our eggs in that basket. And so as we continue through the season, let's hope it was, you know, something smaller that happened last weekend. But it's just seemed like a series of smaller things with him, as opposed to a guy like Tribbett. It's been, I think, tissue with Tribbett. So kind of the opposite issues there.
Who knows what we can expect from this injury, obviously, and we hope he'll be able to get back on the field quickly. I think what's encouraging is that when he is in there, he's had an impact. His average goal has come in the 77th minute, I believe, this year, because naturally he's been coming in as a sub a fair amount. But he had that streak of scoring in, what, five straight games for the club, I believe, in all competitions. So when he's in there, he has the knack, he has the killer instinct to make an impact, and I think that's what Nashville supporters need to expect, that he's not going to obviously probably win the Golden Boot this year, and you hope he's able to get back on the field soon. But when he's on the field, I think there's an expectation he's built even with this club now and in his limited time that he's going to contribute, he's going to poach those opportunities when they arise.
He's a phenomenal player, and you'd think that if injuries hadn't derailed his career at Tottenham, just where would he be playing right now? I mean, this is a guy that was competing with playing time for Harry Kane. And now he's, you know, here in Nashville competing with players for time in USL. I almost liken him a little bit to like a BMW, like this really nice luxury car. You know, it's fast. You know, it's got all these features, but BMWs are prone to often braking. They are running at optimum capacity. They're the best cars on the road when you look at the luxury car series. So I think when you judge Lancaster, you certainly can't blame him for injuries in the way you can't blame any player right. for injuries. You can just hope that he's healthy. And when he is, he's a phenomenal player and probably one of the best top five that this league has ever seen.
Kind of shifting towards the rest of the season. Probably the last injury of note was Derek Jones. We don't know that he'll be back the rest of this season. I would kind of assume we won't see him, but there's no reason to speculate there. He was that guy who we signed, expected him to come in, MLS contract as well there. You know, he was a replacement, not just a depth signing. He was going to end up taking over the number six role, and I'm as big of a Bolu fan as there is, but that guy was, you looked at him, and it was just a different level from anybody we had there in the side. looking forward to the rest of the season. MLS window open today. Do we expect to see anything there? Maybe just as depth sign. We're at a dearth of midfield players right now. To my knowledge, completely healthy. Bolu is the only one. And then as far as attacking players, you still got Belmar, who could pull centrally. We saw that last weekend. And Lebo's healthy as well. So do we expect death signings? Do we expect a guy like Vermeer to come back? What do we look for as we move forward? Because we need some reinforcements. There's no way around it.
Yeah, I think bringing Vermeer back is a sensible first step. A guy who's been with you, there's probably a callback clause in there due to injury. He can step in and at least have some familiarity with the system and chemistry with the guys. I think fans should temper their expectations when it comes to an MLS level signing, simply because, you know, budget is a factor and quality is a factor, and MLS teams are going to be focused on gearing up for their own stretch run and probably less likely to want to shed guys that could even potentially contribute to that. So I think this team needs to button down, maybe make some tactical changes and bring back a guy. Bringing back a guy like Vermeer would be a good first step. But as Nashville looks to tell the story of the second half of this year, it's also looking to tell the story of MLS and building equity with those fans. It's to the extent that they can take some chances and invest some in somebody, they're going to continue to do what their overarching goal is, even beyond a USL championship, which is to continue to grow interest in the game and in this team leading into that first year. The only question, again, though, is what options are going to be available for that? And that's why I think, again, fans should probably lower their hopes a little bit with another type of, you know, Derek Jones or even a bigger guy coming in.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is there's a precedent for going from USL to MLS or the second division, such as, you know, NASL to MLS. And teams have more or less shared some similarities in their jumps, and then they've done some different things in their jumps. I think everybody's looking at, is there a model of just how to do it? When you look back at Cincinnati, people were quite pleased with their July. I'm going to name some names now and tell me just how pleased they are with them now. Fernando Adi was booed, I believe, at Nippert Stadium last weekend. This was their big designated player signing. Fatai Alashe, who played briefly, has seen some spotty time today this year. Pa Kanate, who was on loan from a team in Italy that was supposed to be, you know, one of their next big outside backs, and I don't believe he's still on the team. So, you know, when you think about how impactful signings can be midseason in USL and move to MLS, is you're taking a risk. And in a lot of cases, that risk has not worked out. So I have no insider knowledge. I have no opinion on just what they should do. But I do know that it's just not as simple as, well, let's just sign some guys that, you know, are MLS caliber next year, and let's just get them to finish off this season, and things will be a lot easier. It's not that easy.
Yeah, I think the part there that even you didn't, not just player, they spent MLS money on what came down to a first round USL playoff win. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, when you think about it, financially speaking, it was just kind of a crazy decision to make. I mean, they were already through June the best team in USL, and still at that point on pace for the best USL season ever. And they bring in these reinforcements, obviously with the hopes of winning a title. And they barely got the win against us in the first round.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak for Cincinnati, but you do wonder about, you know, the urgency of getting a player like Fernando Adi, of wanting to make a splash. And in the end, perhaps they, you know, didn't do their due diligence, or whatever it is, for whatever reason, he didn't or hasn't panned out in Cincinnati. You just wonder, you know, if they had gone with the players that they had and then really assessed, you know, some striker options and really worked their channels during the offseason, would they have ended up with a different designated player? And Adi right now, to Cincinnati, a lot of their fans are channeling their frustrations into one player, and that's not a very, you know, healthy thing for the player or for the club. But it's not a good look when your designated player is being booed, and certainly, you know, Nashville would not want to rush into a position in which they, you know, rush some sort of acquisition of a player to compensate for injuries or you know, to make a splash at the expense of doing it the right way. And certainly knowing Mike Jacobs, he has said, you know, from the very beginning,
on record multiple times,
we are a smart club. We are a club that makes proper decisions. We're in it for the long term. We're not just a let's make a splash club. And that's a healthy club. in my opinion, and one I look forward to seeing for several years down the line.
And speaking to his approach, he told me one time too, he said, you know, a guy like Derek Jones is a perfect addition at this level, but a guy like David Ockham, it'd be unfair to him to send him down to USL to play a few months. So not only is it unwise for the club and maybe not a good long-term decision to bring in some of those higher, you know, caliber players for a few month run, it's also unfair to the player. It's not a great look for them. It starts the relationship off on a tenuous path. And so for that reason, again, if there are reinforcements, they're going to be bodies. I don't know that we're going to see a lot of people that are going to come in and play the majority of matches or start the majority of matches throughout the rest of the year.
I think the thing that I would say, too, is that the Cincinnati situation was different in the fact that it was the same ownership making the decisions for the USL and the MLS level, whereas currently, we still have two different organizations, technically speaking, between the MLS and the USL. And so I think for us, it's interesting to keep an eye on where this team is heading long term and the fact that it's not all. Yes, the front office people are there. We know what the hires are, all of those things. But financially speaking, it isn't exactly the same coffers right now. And that's going to influence things as well. So last kind of big idea we'll talk about here. We've got Nashville fifth in the USL table, a lot of home games coming up, and a season that we've been hard hit by injuries. We expect to get some of those guys back. We don't know about some of them. What can we expect, and what do you hope to see for the rest of the season? I think everybody kind of on their base level take towards the beginning of the season was saying one of the good home playoff games, so one of the first four seeds. That's very obviously still within reach. We'll know more on Thursday about injuries. We're going to get, you know, an updated report then. Obviously, we've got a few days off before we play Memphis midweek. But big picture, what do we expect to see with the rest of the regular season? What do you hope to see? Obviously, you know, I don't think any of the players are turning their minds towards MLS yet, and I don't think the office is doing that either. But there is going to be at some point, there's going to be a shift towards the future. And just your general thoughts there.
Yeah, Gary Smith, we talk with him every week before our broadcast, and incredibly honest coach. It's great to have conversations with him because he will give you kind of a temperature reading of the team. And we said, Coach, what are your biggest challenges here in the next coming games? And he said, well, for the rest of the season, one of his biggest challenges is by the time this team gets to the end of the year, the players are going to have a pretty good idea of just where they stand. And his ability to keep them focused on this singular task of USL Cup, winning a playoff game, finishing higher up the table, like those tasks are also coupled with the individual aspirations of the players. And at some point, he is going to have to make sure that everybody is committed. Not saying that they are now. I mean, I feel like they certainly all are. But as the season gets longer, you know, it's human nature to start saying, man, I need to be getting some minutes, or, oh, I need to score some goals to get on some highlight tapes or get on, you know, somebody's radar for next year because my future may not be here. So I think we're going to see really an impressive coaching job down this stretch of keeping this team banded together and keeping them focused on this topic. If you try and think of one word to encompass the close of this season or the second half of the season, I think focus would be one of the biggest ones, especially, you know, you got guys on MLS contracts and you got guys that are fighting for it. How do you bring them all together to accomplish something that this city's never done, which is win a soccer playoff game?
And I think to this point, this has been a very focused team and has dealt well in situations where the expectations of victory were high. You look, for instance, at games against teams outside playoff position. They've dropped 2 points all year. The Charlotte draw was it. They've beaten every other team that's down below the table. So I think these players are used to showing up against those caliber teams. And that should be an ironclad expectation the rest of the year, is they will win the vast majority of games against teams that are in that bottom half of the table. That buys them a playoff spot, but that's really all it buys them, because they've got to start to get results against those teams toward the top. And I think to John's point, the key for Gary is going to be to create that focus on the results this year and to have these players not worry as deeply about those future aspirations. And the message there is, if you win here, you will build a resume that will get you to a top level USL team that'll get you to the next stage of your career, even if that's not MLS next year. And so I think merging the individual aspirations with the team aspirations is key and is not always an easy task, certainly for the coaching staff. But I think we should be encouraged by what this team has done so far this year and by the fact that they're going to have, as you've said, 10 of 15 chances at home, the majority of their games against teams below the playoff line. So lots of chances for individual glory and for players to get those moments and merge their aspirations with what the team is trying to do.
In this next stretch of games, to me, is the most telling. So you go on the road to Memphis, near the bottom of the table. You get Indy 11 at home. You get 3 points against one of the top teams in the league. Mm-hmm. That's an impressive result. But then look at the next game. Swope Park, Hartford, Bethlehem, Charlotte, Charleston. These are teams that right now are barely scrapping for playoff spots. So if you're thinking about, you know, where this season is going, much better answer right around mid to late August. And if Nashville can accumulate a lot of points here in games that they should win, then certainly they're positioning themselves for something like a home playoff game. If not, then we got to be talking about, you know, what can this team do as a team potentially on the road in the playoffs. So really crucial month here, and thankfully a lot of games at home.
Yeah, I think if the storyline in the first half of the season was kind of things that slipped through our hands, it's the second half is that it's there for the taking, right? What a great storyline if we, because essentially it's a series of 6-point games, right? It's all teams ahead of us, and so it's the opportunity to go on this run at home in front of your fans leading into the playoffs, which is absolutely what the club wants, to be able to display at First Tennessee, sell out 11,000 people, a home playoff game, boost season tickets. That's absolutely what they want for next year. But to be able to go on that tear, beat teams who are above you in the table at home, do what you're supposed to do elsewhere on the road against teams below you in the table, and secure that home playoff spot, maybe work towards, you know, top two or three seeds. It's absolutely there. We're in fifth. As bad as some of the injuries have been, as bad as some of the, you know, the Pittsburgh loss was, the Charlotte draw, stuff like that, it's all there in front of you. It literally everything is still on the table.
Yeah, so a question for you. If Nashville is in fifth on September 17th, are you happy with that? That's the day that they start a homestand in which they play 5 of their last 6 on the road.
Yeah, I mean, happy is maybe the wrong word, but I think satisfied, you know what I mean? Like, happier would be further up. But me personally, I think if we can tread water, maintain our position in the table, more importantly, stay healthy through that point in the season, and then have 5 on the trot at home with absolute room, you know, that obviously is dependent on, well, is 4 10 points above 5, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if we have room to grab that number 4 slot, I personally am good with that.
Yeah, and you know, you think about the setup of the USL, how happy are we that they're playoffs?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, you think about how MLS is coming up next year. If this was English Premier League, you're looking at Tampa and you're looking at Indy and you're saying, I don't know.
Yeah, right. Like,
and you're already starting to think about, let's just qualify for Champions League next year. And then you're already thinking about next year in August or something.
Right.
I think we should really enjoy, you know, the setup we have here where Nashville could very well, you know, they're fifth place now and they can make a huge run and we could have a good playoff run. I mean, you look at, we ran a graphic in our last broadcast and it was through 17 games and it compared Louisville 2018, which was the USL champion team versus Nashville 2019. And their records were absolutely identical through 17 games and Nashville had a better goal differential. Now Louisville went on a big run, which Nashville could very well do. I think the other thing that's funny about that is Louisville played 4 home games in those playoffs. Right. So just because you have as many points as Nashville had at the 17 game mark, that doesn't mean that, you know, teams ahead of you aren't going to lose in the playoffs, or that, you know, you can make a run at the end of the season and secure a home playoff game yourself. So I wouldn't, when you look at, you know, the origins of our discussion is, you know, how have you judged this season? It is still having that to be determined vibe to it. And I feel like the TBD will be gone pretty soon here in the next couple games or so.
I think that's well said. And I'll add another hope / expectation in that I think probably transcends even a championship in some ways, which again is that larger story of trying to share the game with Nashville and spread the MLS preparatory love, if you will, to get ready for that. I think July 27th and October 12th are huge days in the life of this franchise. The match is huge against Indy 11, no doubt. Probably going to be an important home match against North Carolina FC at Nissan Stadium in October. But getting 15, 20, 25, I don't know, that's optimistic, but that many thousand people in to watch this team, to get ready for MLS, to get a feel, to me, what those fans draw away from that, even if they don't attend another match the rest of the year, the excitement they take from that is as important as maybe even a result at the end of the year.
Wes is just hyped up because the sight lines for the radio and TV booth are a little better at Nissan Stadium, not behind home plate on those goals on the far side.
It's amazing what you see when it's at midfield. It's really incredible.
We'd be remiss to not mention to kind of everybody that listens, if you're not a season ticket holder from this year in USL, MLS season tickets are on public now, so make sure you get that information. Get your place in line for MLS. I've already grabbed my tickets for next year. It's going to be awesome. And if you go ahead and grab them, those games that Wes mentioned, you're going to get those games for USL with your seats for next year's season ticket as well. So it makes sense to just go ahead and do it now. Go ahead and snag that. I think we're in an interesting spot. You know, it's funny as a fan, and you know, these soccer people, and I'm one of them, you get so in the weeds, right? You're like in this little like nerd soccer universe where it's all you talk about with people, and you kind of realize that most of the general public just isn't paying attention. And so, like, bring somebody to a game, bring somebody to the game on the 27th of July. There's going to be 40,000 empty seats for you to bring someone and sit somebody in there. So let's get somebody there that's going to take in a new game, new experience, and become a season ticket holder down the line, because it is a good product. Even with the injuries, it's a fun thing to do. I think the opportunity's there. John, Wes, seriously, thanks so much for coming in today, guys. We love it when you're able to join us, and it just helps us. And, you know, we're grateful for the work you guys do both on the radio and on TV. So thanks for joining us. Everybody listening, this is Speedway Soccer. We're going to be right back after the break with our preview for the rest of the season, and we're going to just talk about big picture as well. Thanks for listening, as always. We'll be right back.
This episode of Speedway Soccer Pod is brought to you by Taylor Street Coffee and Tea. Taylor Street Coffee and Tea is a new family-owned coffee shop tucked away in Germantown, serving coffee from Crema Coffee Roasters and tea from Firepot Nomadic Teas. Check them out at 100 Taylor Street, Monday through Friday, between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. They're located inside an Art Collective building, so check out their Instagram page to find them, at Taylor Street Coffee. Drop by, drink up.
Hey everybody, welcome back into Speedway Soccer. Again, huge thanks to John Freeman and Wes Bowling for sitting down with us. We love just getting a chat with those guys, so we're grateful for it. We think their insights are good. We hope you enjoyed it. We always enjoy talking to them. Guys, let's go right back into our talk about the season. We've already talked about what's happened. Let's talk about what we think is going to happen. Let's start with this one. What should we expect as far as the transfer window goes? MLS transfer window just opened up. We've had some discussion going on about this in a few different places. And I think we're going to see kind of just the party line trotted by the club here, which is we're going to spend money wisely.
Can I just say something on that?
I hope that you can, because I was looking at you to talk next. So.
Not great at social cues. So the whole spending money wisely thing, I feel like fans heard that and just assume it means they're not going to spend money. Which, I mean, that in the same article that Mike Jacobs talked about spending money wisely, he pointed at Atlanta and Los Angeles FC as two examples of spending money wisely. And both of those clubs have come out the gates and spent big.
But you know what they did, though, at the beginning? They scouted very well. Though. That's why it helped them out. And I feel like that's an underrated part of spending, is you have to be really good at scouting to get your bang for your buck. And once those players come in, you develop them.
He's saying they're not going to go out and buy, like, I mean, obviously this isn't going to happen. They're not going to go out and spend, like, $400,000 a week on Alexis Sanchez, who's going to produce absolutely nothing. I'm a United fan, and I'm not happy. But so I think They're going to spend money.
So you're saying we might not sign Ochoa as a keeper and a DP?
I'm not.
Are you breaking news right now?
No, I'm not saying that. But they're going to spend money. They've said that they're going to be in the top third of teams, that they're going to they're not just here to take part, that they're going to put together a roster that's going to compete. But at the same time, they're not just going to throw money on a big name just because they can. They're going to look and build a team that actually fits together on the field, and they're going to invest it in players who they actually think can produce.
And I'm going to go in and be a little more less diplomatic than I think John was in that interview when we sat down, but the prime example of someone who did not spend money wisely was FC Cincinnati last year at this very same point in time.
FC Cincinnati, sorry to Cincinnati soccer talk, not really. FC Cincinnati is a perfect example of what not to do.
FC Cincinnati is a dumpster fire.
And Nashville knew that already, but it just kind of reinforces it. Don't just use allocation money to bring in players. Don't spend on players and bring them down to USL for 6 months and just get them readjusted to MLS.
And don't treat super draft picks like NFL draft picks.
Right.
It was just very... Hire
people with experience
like
to make...
Kevin Costner was doing
something. Hire people with experience in the game to make technical decisions. Yeah, I think... I get that a lot of...
Yeah, let's go to that Twellman bit, okay?
Let's go there.
Look,
you cannot
blame
stadium
issues. As stupid as anything
I've
read in a long time, right?
Stadium issues are not why Cincinnati's struggling. The reason they're struggling is because they put a guy in charge of building a team who has never...
Did we heed their warning? Well, considering we've done everything different the entire process... we didn't need to heed their warning.
Because I think the biggest thing with Cincinnati is not only are they bad right now, they are set up to be bad for a long time.
Right.
One of the things, and we're going to get into as we get closer to the end of the season, all of the mechanisms for roster building in MLS. But one of the things as an expansion team is you get a large amount of allocation money to start out that never comes back, never ever gets replenished.
And they literally put it in a barrel and burned it.
They're going to have less next season than they have right now.
They put it in a barrel and burned it. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
And three of those guys that they signed at this point last year aren't even on the... I mean, Adi is still there, right? But Alasha isn't anymore?
He's barely played.
And the one guy's back in Israel, right?
Yeah. Saif, they didn't use any allocation money on Saif, but Adi has yet to score a goal in MLS. Yeah. He scored one against Louisville. They've wasted all the money, the allocation money to get Hagelin, who there's a lot of chances that he's going to go. Greg Garza has been injured, and they spent a ton of allocation money to get Garza, who has an injury history.
They brought up how many players from USL?
Eight. And they parsed some of those guys out.
Haven't played significantly.
Ledesma has played a little bit.
And to be fair, he was, I think, team of the week last week. So, he's...
That's one time. There's a lot of...
Right, no.
Look, I'm going to put a pin in the Cincy talk with this.
I just want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
Their technical director used, cited experience coaching his daughter's youth team as, putting together an MLS roster. Nashville is, completely the opposite. They have... Their entire technical staff has experience in the game at a high level doing what they're doing.
Doing well, going back to the spending wisely, because we've come back around about, Sporting Kansas City is a great example of spending money wisely. They spend money in positions on the field. They invest highly in certain positions, but they don't just they're not ones that are buying the big flashy DPs. Look at the guys that they're top performers. Some of their DPs, whether it be Namath or Johnny Russell, wasn't some huge flashy name that they went and brought over who has excelled. So I think that, having a coaching or a technical staff, whether it be, Jacobs, Chance Myers, who is the head of scouting, all of those guys knowing how they've seen teams built and being around those, I think is a good example of spending money wisely.
And just to kind of wrap this up, one other thing I've seen a lot is if Nashville is struggling in USL this season, then how do we expect them to have a decent season in MLS next year? And those things are just completely unrelated. Cincinnati was the best regular season team in USL history, and Minnesota was had a really good season at NASL before they went up.
Yeah,
there's no argument for either
causation or correlation there. Like, it's just going to be what it, I'm not telling you we're going to light the world on fire like Atlanta did. I don't.
Right.
Know
I mean,
that. But I will tell you this: we're not going to get scored on seven times in one game. Like
multiple
FCC
times
in
a season.
So right. Gary Smith's side isn't going
to
do that.
Yeah. So all that is to say, like, success or failure in USL this season does not mean success or failure in MLS next year.
Yeah.
It's a completely different animal.
So we're going to get to the fan questions in a minute. But to the guy who tweeted out names and that kind of stuff, we're not going to do that because we're not insiders. We don't, like, know the names that the club is actually
looking
at.
But I
don't want to see a loan right now for Pity Martinez or something like that because I think it does us, like, absolutely no good. Mm. So to me, if you want to, like, we can put a pin in this part of the conversation, what we expect to see is just I just want to see the exact opposite things that happen.
And
in
I also
Cincinnati.
Think we're still a little ways out from
I also think it's hard to see what – we don't even know what players are available.
Exactly.
So, I think the listener was asking, you know, what players would we like to see come in. But I think, you just don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a bad question. I'm just saying I don't know the answer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know who those people are, realistically speaking, real names that we could name.
Yeah, we'll find out more later.
Let's talk about this, though. Names that we do know, situations that we do understand. Ben, you start off. Who do you see possibly making the jump from USL to MLS? And we'll put this kind of context around it. The guys that we know on MLS contracts don't count. So Lancaster, Rios, Jones, and Akam, they don't count.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to talk depth players here. Guys who might actually see some MLS minutes. Because I think we'll see some guys just, you know, bounce names around that are just going to fill the roster out, Open Cup games, stuff like that. But guys who we think are actually going to see some minutes.
I think he might not see minutes. I think Connor Sparrow is a guy who could be a number two keeper off the bat and could grow into a bigger role. And then I think we talked about him earlier. I think Ropapa Mensah is a guy who's kind of a low-risk, high-reward type player. They purchased his rights last season, so the club owns it. And I think he's a guy who we've seen flashes. He's still young. He's still improving, and he could turn into a decent contributor
once
at that
level. Once he gets that MLS nutrition as well, too, and like all the conditioning and strength and stuff like that,
he has the upside.
Yeah,
it's just a question
exactly.
if he can consistently produce.
Yeah, and then I think Balo Akinyode is another one. We have been very clear of how much we really like Balu and his game. I think he has a physicality that will translate well into MLS and the ability, you know, to make that jump up. I mean, he's still fairly young, but he's getting to the point now where he has to, you know, there is a point where he has to either, you know, make that jump up or not. I think he can. I also think that, you know, he may have a chance to, you know, depending on what Gary sticks with as a system-wise looking at next season, maybe we see him drop back and into that center back role.
That'd be interesting.
In back three, it could work.
Well, I think Trivett's also another guy, and I know we've touched on him a lot, but he's just been so fantastic. Utah, want to talk about a guy that there's physicality on the field. That guy knows how to get up, win balls. He also reads the field really well, too, knows where strikers are going, knows where the ball is going as well, too. So I think he could definitely transition to MLS.
And he's played it. He's played, I mean, not consistently, but he played for Philadelphia for a bit in MLS, so he's played at that level before.
Mm-hmm. My only concern with Trivett, especially, is injury record.
Yeah.
He's had injury issues, and while he would be a depth guy coming in, my biggest concern is you can't afford your depth. You need your depth guys to step in.
Right.
I've seen it specifically, you know, as a Liverpool fan with some of our center backs who are good depth players, but at times can be injury prone, and then you're stuck sitting around like, oh, we have a center back issue. We need someone to step in, but oh, this person's injured.
For me, with Trivett specifically, it's one of those ones where you're betting on. Everything's a wager, right? And you're wagering on his talent versus the potential for injury. And I just think the talent is through
right.
the roof there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hopefully when you get into a better MLS nutrition program, you know, better physio, all of that kind of stuff, hopefully some of that stuff just kind of goes away.
And from a spending perspective, too, you're getting you're getting good value. I mean, none of these guys you're bringing up from USL are going to command a huge MLS salary.
American players have value in MLS. Like, you get good return on that investment.
Right, but they're, I mean, also, like, Lancaster, Rios, and Derek Jones. They're all at least, I mean, it might change next year, but at least as of 2019, they're all making under $100,000, which is a great bargain at the MLS level. Yeah. And then bringing guys up to USL, you'd probably be at that or even less. So it's a good, I mean, if you want depth, it's a good way to get it at a low cost.
Now, health-wise, I'm going to put that as a check mark in Bolu's column because, look, I think the difference was noticeable, right, between him and Derek Jones when they were on the field next to each other in that game against Charleston, the Open Cup match. Has Bolu been hurt the whole time he's been here?
No.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like, look, I know.
It's actually the opposite.
I know we gassed the guy. We gassed the guy up. I know that, right? Like, we all have maybe an unfairly high opinion of the guy because we just like him so much. But the dude is rock solid. He's healthy. And he undoubtedly goes out there and plays that number six position the way it's meant to be played.
He's not always going to give you, like, a 9 out of 10 performance, but he's never going to drop down to, like, a 5. And he's consistent.
I don't see him being, like, a huge contributor minutes-wise. But again, he is only 24 years old, and he's heading in the right direction. And I just don't see what you can. I get people not being in love with the position that he plays, but I think he plays the position.
You're not supposed to be
well
in love with that position, anyways, because it's a grinder. It's a grinder position.
Anyways, so I mean, I think you guys are on it. There's more guys, and we'll talk later in the season about guys who we think will be potential for depth there, but I'm with you. Those are the couple of guys that we think are in the right spot. And obviously, Lancaster, Rios, Jones, Akam, those guys are going to be there no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, health-wise, all that kind of stuff, we just want to see them get healthier and also see them continue to produce while they're on the field. Okay, kind of big conversation. We talked about it with Wes and John. What do we think we've got to do the rest of the way through the season, guys? You know, it's... We're more than halfway through. Like I said, we're in fifth in the table, and I think we kind of set the stage well with Wes and John before. Like I said it previously and kind of offered my thoughts. I think we can still go out there and grab this thing by the scruff of the neck, man. We've got the opportunity with matches at home. Yes, we haven't been great at home so far this season. I would argue, and we'll talk more about that with the fan question. Actually, just go ahead and rip that question off, Slate. There was a couple about form at home, right?
Yeah, so we did have a from Robbie Aces on Twitter. What do you think the club why do you think the club has performed better away than at home? Style? Is it leadership? Weather? What have you? And so
Yeah, so for me, it's just, like, I think there's so much parity in this league, and we've talked about our injuries, we've talked about this and that. Look, there's two. I'm of two minds here. You can look at our schedule and say we've played better teams on the road than we have at home, and we've gotten more points on the road than we have at home, and that's undeniable. But, like, things just shake out weird ways in this league, man. Like, we're by all accounts a better team than Charleston, by the table, by the players on the roster, they've beaten us twice. Like, it is what it is. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just how this league goes. I don't put a ton of stock in that. I think our performances have been fine at home. I don't think the results have been fine, but I think the performances haven't been noticeably worse than they have been on the road. I think we're going to be fine.
I mean, Gary's talked about it. He said, I mean, just at home being the one under pressure to, like, dictate the game, whereas at home you can kind of be a little bit more reactive, and it's usually a little bit more open with a home team pushing for a goal. I think, just going off of what you said a second ago, I think Nashville's, just performance-wise, they've been really good. They've usually had, like, a 10 or 15-minute stretch at home, especially in the first half, where they just kind of come out and dominate and create chances. And I think we've seen just on multiple occasions that they've had those stretches and just haven't capitalized and created chances and haven't finished, which is kind of an outlier to the rest of the season where they've finished pretty well. So I think it's just, and Gary said this, just taking advantage of those moments when you're on top and just being a little bit more ruthless. I think if they can start doing that, we'll see a significant improvement at home.
So all that being said, what do we expect to see the rest of the way for the season?
Position-wise, I think a home playoff match is still in the cards, definitely.
And you mean the top four home playoff match,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. I also do think that Daniel Rios can make a run at the Golden Boot as well, too. I think that'd be a really, you know.
What are the actual stats on that? How far back is he?
He's, I think, one.
I think he's one goal behind or something like that.
This is great content right here. This waiting is for just, the
I mean, you could cut it.
Professional right here.
Asante for Phoenix leads with 12. Rios is tied for second with 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, behind Kevon Frater.
Dude, he can absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. And that'd be a huge feather in the cap for Nashville as well, too, to go in there and be like, say we had the top goal scorer. Yeah. I don't know if it had, if there's any stock in that, but I still but think still, it's an accolade.
It's better than not having the top goal scorer.
And there's a lot of talk that actually, which would be hilarious, that Frater may actually be going to Cincinnati. Yeah. So that takes out some competition there.
I know we've talked about Rios a lot. Lancaster, he's not played nearly as much, but he's been good. I mean, so Rios is scoring or assisting every 1.3 games. Lancaster is right at 1.5. So,
just
I mean,
less minutes.
Just right. less minutes, but right. he's consistently produced. So, I mean, I think we talked about this in the first second, so I'm not going to go back into it, but just the improvements we've seen up front have been significant.
Agree completely. But we're all in agreement here, right? Home playoff match is like the bar, right? We got to get to that point, and we all agree that that's well within our reach.
I think for me, you have to start performing against playoff teams.
Well, I think to get the home playoff match, you have to do that.
Right, but just like
you play them all at home, just you got to do it.
Nashville, of teams currently in playoff position, Nashville has taken the least points against other playoff teams. They have 7 points against teams who are in playoff position. They're averaging 0.7 points a game.
Right.
Which is, I mean,
and it's seven of the 10 playoff teams come to First Tennessee Park.
Yeah.
Or, well, Nissan Or, right?
Yeah. So, right, they come play in Nashville. Yeah. So, I mean, at some point, if you want to have any chance at a playoff run, if you want to really be a serious contender, you have to be able to beat good teams.
The teams and they that are going to play in the playoffs, right, yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, I mean, I just think to get the home playoff match, we're going to have to do that in some. Now, look, I think Wes made a great point in saying that the flip side of that coin is good teams can't drop points to bad teams, and we've only done that once all season in that Charlotte match. So we do have a lot of remaining matches against teams that aren't in playoff position around the very bottoms of it. A lot of those are at home, too. So if we can just tread water there, get those results like we're supposed to, and then take a few scalps at home, we don't got to beat everybody, right?
Right.
We don't got to beat all of them, but you don't lose games to those teams. Get a point.
At least pick a point.
Win a couple of them. Mm-hmm. You're in totally fine place. I don't think we can catch Tampa Bay, but I think we could grab two. I mean,
and teams in front of them, they got a draw on the road against Indy, who were in second. They got a draw on the road against New York.
Red Bulls,
and you have the potential to take, when they come back, you have the potential to take 4 points.
Especially looking at the next two games, which we'll talk more about on the next episode, but I mean, there's no excuse that we should lose to Memphis. Like, Memphis should be...
Memphis, they've won one game at home all year.
So, and Memphis, and
against
then...
Hartford.
And then if you go beat Indy at home, I mean, that closes that gap real quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so look, I think we're in good shape for that. And, I mean, I think that's what fans just have to be...
Was it 5 of the last 6 matches are in Nashville?
5 Correct. Of the last 6 are in Nashville. Yeah, yes. You're exactly right. Look, I think the rest of the summer, you get into the fall, I think we've got an awesome opportunity in front of us for some really good soccer to be played. Really good results to be gotten. And, I mean... We've got 2 games at Nissan. We had right around $19,000 at both of those. I think it was $18,500 and up at both of those last year. Like, let's just get people out, man. Get people out to the games. We're building to. I guarantee you, the club wants a home playoff match, right? Like, they want that to build into next year. Look, man, I think we're at an awesome opportunity. I want to see us just seize that opportunity, grab it by the scruff of the neck. We haven't done that at points this season in games, but. Look, we're going to get healthier. Guys are going to come back. We've got the talent, so let's just see the team keep improving. Guys, any final thoughts as we head into the end of this episode?
No.
I mean, look, it's not been the season I think anybody necessarily expected, which I don't know why anyone expects anything in USL. It could have been way worse. And again, I think, Ben, you said it really, really well. In context, if you look at all of the injuries, I think what we've done is actually pretty good. But let's stay healthy and let's win more.
I mean, there's still half
games.
The season. We could, when we have this conversation again in however many months, 17 games or whatever, things could look completely different.
Completely different.
Yeah.
And let's say we finish fourth in the table, one home playoff game, but you rip off a run to the conference final, or you know what I mean?
Like, no one's going to remember the regular season.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's just like, that's how playoffs work, you know what I mean? So it's, you just got to be peaking at the right time. Mm-hmm. I don't think the team has been close to peaking. So,
You know who isn't peaking, though? The St. Louis Blues in January, and they went on to win the Stanley Cup.
That's a fair point. Yeah. We want to see the team just continue to get better.
I don't know, badminton, I think.
Well, guys, good to be back together. We've got a great upcoming rest of the season. I'm excited for it. A lot of games at home for us to be at, and a lot of more coverage. So if you're there listening, make sure you check us out at SpeedwaySoccer.com for our written content. Continue to look for these podcasts. We're going to be back next week with a preview of Memphis. It's Indy as well.
Indy's the next weekend.
The following weekend. Yeah, there's another break. Okay, yeah.
Memphis on Wednesday. Next Wednesday, so a week from today.
And then 10 days later, it's Indian.
No, not 10. Yeah, it's an
Italy. Yeah, 27th.
Yeah, it is a long break.
Another
there.
Long break. So, yeah, so we'll be back. We'll preview that game. Maybe we'll talk a little bit around the league because it's not going to be as much to talk about NSC-wise. But stay tuned for that. As always, we're on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network. We're grateful for that relationship. Also grateful for BGN, a beautiful game network. They're going to keep us supplied with guests for the rest of the season as we play USL teams. Stay tuned for broadcasting stuff as far as if there's news, transfers, whatever, we're going to get it out to you as fast as anybody does. You can trust Ben's on that. He's got the alerts going, so we'll get it out to you. Stay tuned on Twitter, social media, everything. Listen, we love doing this. We're glad you guys listen. We're grateful to Roughneck Scarves, Golden Goal Press. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week. This is Speedway Soccer.